Well, hi everybody, and welcome to another episode of Lab Automation 101. Before we kick off, I just wanted to say thank you to everybody who has downloaded the podcast. We're in 12 countries, 55 different cities, and actually it's pretty humbling, and I'm very, like I said, very thankful, very grateful for that. Shifting our attention then back to the podcast. I think on the previous episodes, a lot of what has come out is that lab automation has to be a, you know, any solution that we put forward has to be a multifaceted solution, meaning that we can't just focus on the instrument or on the robot itself. We have to take into consideration other aspects. So, you know, you have to think about finances. You have to think about budgets. You definitely have to think about people. So we had a previous podcast where we spoke about change management and, you know, how if we don't take into consideration the impact that the solution brings in terms of change to the lab, the implementation could fail subsequently. And so today, actually what we want to do is we want to continue with the theme of people, looking more from the perspective of recruitment and retention, because these are two very, I would say, key aspects that all labs, in fact, all businesses have to deal with. It's definitely affecting their business. So I think the more knowledgeable we are in that respect, I think we'll also touch on a little bit later in the chat how automation perhaps can help in terms of recruitment and retention. So to help us today to discuss the labor market, I'm very excited. We've got Ian Cooper from Biomed Recruitment. Ian, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Alex. I appreciate you having me on. It's great to hear how international you are now as well. So yeah. Congrats with the success so far. I know you're just starting out, but really appreciate you thinking of me and having me on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. 100%. And Ian, I think before we get right into the podcast, I will talk to you a little bit about the football because I know that you're a football fan. I am assuming you have been watching the World Cup, of course.
Of course. Yeah. You know, we'll save everybody the time and end up switching the podcast off right away by talking about that after we wrap up.
So I won't ask you where your loyalty lies with your dad from Liverpool. I think your mom from the US. So I'm not going to put you in that position, but what I will ask you though is I will ask you for a prediction though. Who will win the World Cup?
Yeah, it's an easy one, but I'd say Brazil. They're too good this year. So I am going to stick with them.
Oh, wow.
What do you think?
On a sentimental value side, I want Argentina only because of Messi. It's his last World Cup. He probably deserves it. I'd really like England to win it, but I don't think they'll get there in the end. And I'm going to go out on a limb. I don't know why they don't play the best football, but there's something about Holland. I have no idea why. They just seem to grind out the results. So I'm going to go and see, probably Holland might win it all.
All those teams have a chance. We'll see.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, thanks again for having me on. Obviously a bit of a different guest. Not coming from somebody that works in a lab, but I do get the opportunity to speak with lab automation engineers all day, every day. I've done so now for the past couple of years, so definitely get a good grip on the lab automation market from a hiring and recruitment perspective, and just learn more every single day from these conversations that I have.
No, absolutely, and so actually, there's something I wanted to touch on then, because I think coming out of COVID, you know, a lot of the headlines have been, I think the term they use is the Great Resignation. You know, people coming out, I think they were frustrated. Overworked perhaps as well, stressed out, and really just burnt out, I guess, from it all. And it's not just in the life sciences. This is right across all businesses. And so we're starting to see, as I said, people just leaving. I think I read a recent stat that over 50% of employees in the US are quietly quitting, meaning they're doing just enough to keep their head above the water, but not going above and beyond, let's just say, from that perspective. So post-COVID, and I think it's fair to say we are post-COVID now. If you were looking at, let's say, I don't know, and I don't know how many trends there are, so I'm just going to say 3-4 trends, the key trends that are out there. What are the key trends that you're seeing in the labor market then?
Yeah, absolutely. And before I get into that, I'll just do a really quick overview just so the listeners know what it is we do. So my recruitment agency is focused on lab automation. We're on the headhunting direct hire full-time side. So recruitment agencies can be more staffing, meaning they hire just contractors. This is all direct hire full-time. And we work on the hardest to fill positions for companies because of that. And that's how I got into lab automation. When COVID hit, there has definitely been a high demand, and the demand and supply has just been completely thrown off. So I would say the biggest hiring trend started then, and that's when I can really speak from initially. It's been a little over 2 years now since I first started hiring lab automation. And I think it was already a high demand skill set to find somebody with that biology or at least like assay development background, but could also work on application development and program liquid handlers. And when these COVID testing companies started emerging, they definitely needed that quickly. So to attract companies to a company that may not be the most stable or not have a plan besides just COVID testing, they were definitely offering overinflated salaries, and they had the finances to do so. They were getting government funding, but they were also pretty much getting instant revenue as well. So I wouldn't say the candidates were just going to these companies because of the salaries. That's definitely not the case. There were obviously a variety of reasons why it may have been a better opportunity from where they were previously working, of course. But the salary started to increase pretty drastically. So that's what threw off the market even more. It was already high demand, but it then became a case of companies really having to offer their employees more money to retain them, or of course, offering a lot higher salaries to attract new hires as well. So that's the skill set that I've been most involved with, those that focus on new method development, actually program the liquid handlers. We do a variety. There's obviously so much nuances within lab automation, so we've hired those more focused on assay development, those more focused on service or support with the liquid handlers as well, but mostly hire for drug discovery, synthetic biology, diagnostic companies, and then also we do hire for lab automation companies that are on the hardware software side. So those that sell liquid handlers, those that sell software like integration scheduling software as well. And those are field service application scientists and engineering roles mainly. But yeah, no, it's been definitely crazy over the last couple of years, a lot of different changes. I would say that demand stayed pretty consistent for a solid couple of years, where there was still just way more job openings and companies hiring than there were actually people that did what they were looking for. That makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And so what I guess coming out of COVID then, I mean, one of the biggest trends therefore is just to offer a higher salary just to attract these candidates then.
Yeah, it's definitely not always that easy though. And I saw a lot of companies make mistakes by just offering whatever salary that they could offer to attract this employee through the door. Pay equality is so important at companies, as it should be. And if you're at a company and you see somebody new coming in that's maybe not as qualified as you are, but they're getting paid a lot more than you, that just throws off the balance massively. And companies that had more consistent leveling and pay ranges for each level are definitely in a much better place currently than companies that were just offering any salary to get people through the door because it just wasn't sustainable whatsoever. So salaries were one way to attract new people. I think that a lot of companies needed to take a bit of a chance on certain candidates that definitely had that foundational experience and skill set and the potential that maybe needed a bit of training. A good example of that would be these application developers that focus on, you know, developing methods from scratch on liquid handlers, automating workflows. But maybe we'll use Hamilton's, for example, they're not experts with Venus software just yet. So a lot of companies would hire candidates experienced with liquid handlers, but maybe haven't worked too much on the software side just yet and would have to train them up. So those that are good at troubleshooting, have worked heavily on like the service support side could be good candidates for that type of role. Others are maybe more bench scientists that really understand the assay development process and how it works, doing everything manually and have obviously worked with liquid handlers before, but just haven't worked with the software side of it yet. So companies had a lot of success hiring that way as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, and so if you flip the script maybe a little bit, because I know sometimes companies might think that they know what prospective candidates are looking for. And so sometimes, you know, the easiest thing to do sometimes is just to throw money at a problem. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it sticks, and hopefully by, you know, like that, they get some candidates in. It's a little bit of a short-term approach because, you know, there's always going to be another company that can pay a little bit more. And so, you know, we have this constant rotating, wheel almost where, you know, they're jumping off, getting onto, into the other one and then just continuing like that. So, but when you speak to, applicants also, cause you're also interviewing them and sourcing for all these different companies that you work with. What are you hearing from them in terms of what they're looking for in a prospective employer?
Ooh, definitely a good question. So I think that the most obvious ones can be applied across any industry. So I won't really go into those as much, but of course, higher salaries, a shorter commute, work from home flexibility, a supportive team and manager. Those are of course, very universal across the board. But for those involved with lab automation, there are a few demands isn't the right word, but things that they're looking for that I hear pretty commonly. One is to be more focused on development. So a lot of the time within lab automation, you most likely already know this, but you can get to a place where you're late stage in the development, and it's more focusing on scaling rather than actually new method development for new workflows. So a lot of the time candidates do want to get more involved with both the development, but both and the integration as well is a big key one. So just the ability to get more into like a high throughput environment and process more samples, and a lot of the time building out integrated robotic workflows really does help with that. So a lot of the time candidates may just be working with standalone instruments, but they want to work with different scheduling softwares or again, help with the integration side of lab automation, which is really exciting to candidates.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, I think from what I'm hearing, at least to be able to use a little bit more their innovative, creative side, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the time too, it may have to do with working with a new brand of liquid handlers. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of consistency with what are candidates' favorites. I would say that Hamilton's, TCAN's, Agilent's are still the most popular brands. Some people prefer ones rather than others, but a lot of candidates may work with one brand but want experience with another brand. So I always get asked what liquid handling brands are currently being utilized at that lab, if there's a variety or if there's just one.
Oh, that's interesting. And just out of curiosity, yeah. What if they're not using an automated liquid handler? Do they not consider that lab then, or how does it work?
So those are the roles that I'm mostly working on, to be honest. I can't speak much more about automation in labs that's not really involved with liquid handling. I'm busy enough with working on those type of roles, those type of companies. But a lot of the time it can be the type of company as well. Obviously lab automation is very broad in what the company does. Any lab can benefit from using automation. So somebody may be at a diagnostic company, but want to get more into drug discovery, vice versa. So definitely matters as well what the actual science is as well, because they're very closely tied into the science still.
Okay. And I'm interested because before you mentioned, like, you know, one of the, I said, you said not demands, I guess, but one of their maybe requirements is a better word to use.
Absolutely. That's what I was looking for.
this aspect of being able to work from home, have a little bit of flexibility, you know, and I have, you know, I have a little bit of experience in this and that, you know, I have a young daughter who works in New York mm-hmm. and she has also a little bit of that flexibility to be working from home. And I know of that generation, and I sound very old when I'm saying of that generation, but you know, in their 20s, maybe arguably, looking a little bit for that flexibility, that shorter commute, maybe, you know, 1 or 2 days a week to be working from home. But how are you seeing that shape up in terms of, you know, life sciences and especially if you're working in a lab, how does that marry, I guess, with wanting to work from home, maybe, you know, once or twice a week?
Yeah, no, it's a hot topic right now. I think with these type of engineers and scientists that are in labs so consistently, it's really dependent on what stage in a project that you're in. Certain projects, especially near the beginning, you're going to need to be in the lab and extremely hands-on for everything. So just understanding that at that time, it's going to be hard to work from home, but a lot later in projects, documentation is a big part of these roles. So it really depends on the individual's responsibilities. Of course, those more on the software side of lab automation are going to be able to do scripting and certain responsibilities from home as well. So I think it's very important for employers to set something up where there is work from home flexibility and they have the ability to be successful doing documentation, you know, scripting, or really any responsibilities that they can do from home. Companies that tell their candidates that are interviewing that they need to be in the lab 100% of the time, it's definitely a hard no for a lot of candidates and just kind of has them raise questions about what the work-life balance will be, of course. I always want the company that I'm hiring for to set as realistic expectations as they can during the interview process. So definitely don't oversell anything, but set up flexibility. I mean, even just the ability to commute during off hours and avoid traffic is absolutely huge. And then hopefully you can give examples to different responsibilities that can be done from home, how often team members are currently working from home, that kind of thing. And it absolutely helps. What's difficult is expecting an employer for these type of roles to have a set policy. Like you can work from home 2 days a week, but you need to be in the lab 3 days a week. It's just too difficult with how the projects are always evolving and you just don't know on the given day or given week if you'll need to be in or not.
Correct. Yeah, I think that's actually, it's a really big challenge for, you know, not just in this industry in fairness, but across right all industries, trying to get this balance, right. Because there is, you know, there is an argument to say, okay, working from home, it's important. But at the same time, there is an aspect of, especially if you're new in the role, you're new to the company, you just graduated, you're coming into the workforce. There is, you know, some benefit of being in the office, you know, having face-to-face time with your manager, even just being able to chat to your colleagues face-to-face and so forth. You know, at least from my perspective, maybe I'm old school because that's how I did it, you know, and a lot of it is, everything is online in fairness. So it's sometimes a little bit easier in that respect. But Ian, then going back then specifically for, we've talked about, you know, recruitment and retention. So specifically about lab automation now. So how can, you know, a lab automation solution help in terms of recruitment, and how can it help in terms of actually, you know, retention, keeping the candidates then?
Yeah, no, great question. So I believe, I know we've touched on salary quite a bit, but it just has been a big topic of discussion because of how much salaries have increased throughout these past couple of years. Almost every lab automation engineer, it seems like, has changed jobs in the past couple of years at some point. And it wasn't all due to finances, but we talk to a lot of what we call passive candidates. So those that are happy in their current role, we're never pressing, you know, specific jobs on them. We more just want to understand what they do and leave the door open for when the time is right for them and hear what it is they'd be looking for to make a change. And a lot of time we find out how underpaid they currently are. And we, of course, know what other companies are paying. So if you can just offer a competitive salary and not rely on things like Radford Data as one of the big data sources for current compensations, comp ranges that are outdated because of how this is currently evolving, that definitely helps. And having set ranges for each level, I would say, definitely helps as well. Like I said, so the pay quality isn't off. You don't necessarily need to have set levels, in regards to the exact years of experience. I've seen candidates be pretty upset with that and leave or not go to a company because of titling differences. And I know that's a bit confusing. What I mean by that is some companies are very strict on bachelor's plus 9 years as a senior level role, or master's plus 5, PhD plus 3, whatever it may be. Usually it should definitely be more down to the relevance of experience as well as your skill set that you interview at. So being a bit more flexible on the leveling and titles is huge to both attract and retain, I think. But of course it needs to be equal throughout your company, that people at the same levels are getting paid the same and then also are at the same skill level as well, which I hear pretty consistently is not the case. And candidates a lot of the time get upset and want to make a change if they're getting paid less and are more experienced than somebody they're working closely with.
Right. I mean, when I've spoken to a few candidates and to some other people in different companies and so forth, I think, you know, one of the key takeaways is that, you know, joining a lab, let's say, that offers, that has an automated solution versus a lab that doesn't. I think, especially from the younger generation and even from older ones as well, it's, you know, a lot of people are actually looking to be engaged. You know, they want to add value. You know, they want to have a say in how things are developing and what's happening and so forth. And I think, you know, automated solutions in theory, they take care of all the boring stuff. Because nobody wants to do the boring stuff. Yeah. Even though the reality is they want to do some boring stuff. Yeah. And I think, you know, what we spoke about in previous podcasts is that just the automated solutions allow for more value adding activity. You spoke earlier about how, you know, everybody wants to be involved more in terms of the creative, innovative side and so forth. And so if you're fluffing about, you know, with, you know, opening and decapping and capping tubes and this, that, and the other, you're not really having an opportunity to do that. You're therefore, you're not really very engaged. And that's sometimes how now your eye might start to wander a little bit and think, oh, what about this company over there? They look a little bit more attractive. you know, isn't there?
Definitely. Yeah. And I wanted to bring up the finances first, but that you're absolutely right. I think, a lot of the times candidates may be more focused on the service and support side than they want to be, especially those that are high level. So the more opportunity they have to work on the exciting development projects, like I said, those integration projects as well. And then it may sound obvious, but just a supportive and collaborative team of course. And we hire for a lot of exciting startups. And I think that is definitely a trend, leaving the larger corporations where you just feel like another number, and getting into an organization, helping set up the automation for scratch, being a big part of the company's a success, you know, seeing your work being felt all the way up to the C-suite executive level and just making a large impact with the work that you're doing as well.
Yeah. And I don't think that point can be overestimated. I mean, it's just, innate sort of human desire to want to contribute and to, you know, to feel like you're appreciated. And I think it's very basic, you know, just to feel appreciated and valued, to be honest, on that perspective. Ian, final question for me then. Moving forward, so you know, we did the post-COVID, talk about current trends and so forth. But if you were to look into your crystal ball, you know, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, how does the labor market then look then in this space?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say from what we spoke about earlier on in COVID, mid 2020 till about mid 2022. So for 2 years, the demand and supply was definitely very skewed in the respect of way more job openings than there were people looking. I'd say it's more balanced now. There's not as many companies hiring currently as we sit at the end of 2022. But there's also not too many candidates looking either. You'd think with layoffs there would be, but it hasn't affected, I would say, that many lab automation engineers as much as it has in other industries. So another reason for that is, like I said, over the past couple of years, most people have switched positions. And I think that a lot of people have recently changed jobs, so they're not looking because of that reason, or they're overall happy. And if they're working in a stable company that things are mostly going all right for them, they're probably just wanting to sit and wait and see what happens in the economy before taking right. more of a risk and making the jump right now. So because of that, I think the candidates that are looking have a very legitimate reason to. They're not happy with how things are going and they definitely want to make a move. Whereas before, like I said, we were talking to candidates and hiring those pretty frequently that were happy at their current employer, but they were just able to find something a lot better that they didn't know existed before, you know, we started having them interview at a variety of different companies. So I think that will change in 2023. A lot more candidates start looking once they get their bonuses paid out, and a lot of times when their stocks vest around the February, March timeframe. And I think a lot of companies will start hiring a lot more in 2023 as well. Right now, for similar reasons, they're just kind of pulling back and only making a hire if they absolutely have to due to like a backfill or if they really are short in the terms of automation and need more hands there. But if they're overall okay, I think they just want to see how things shake up over the next couple of months, because that is one of the biggest reasons for these layoffs is companies just having crazy sales and revenue forecasts at the beginning of the year and overhiring for that reason. So I think companies are being much more strategic with hiring right now, but in 2023, hopefully, and I do predict and believe that a lot more companies will start hiring. I think there's way too many companies that are doing just fine right now and do need more hands, and automation, as you know, can actually save companies quite a bit of money as well. And then a lot of candidates will start to look again, the beginning to mid next year. So that's kind of my 2023 prediction. As far as moving forward, it seems like there's just always new advances within lab automation, and those, again, that can work a little bit more on like the software side, the program liquid handlers, or those that are very involved with, you know, integration, or, you know, I've heard great trends with like mobile robotics rolling around the lab, or those that are involved in DevOps or virtualizing everything. So I think there's a lot of new interesting trends where a lot of jobs will be created out of that as well. And it's just going to continue to grow. I've seen it massively evolve over the last couple of years since I've been involved with it. And it seems like it's only the beginning in a lot of ways.
Yeah. In fairness, I put you a little bit on the spot by asking you to look into a crystal ball.
2023 is easier than moving forward, but it's exciting. It definitely is.
No, I mean, you're right in the sense that, you know, there's a lot of things and a lot of moving parts, I guess, and it's really hard to predict, even 1 year out, in all honesty, let alone, I think I asked you 3-5 years in the future. So that, you know, we'll have to come back and revisit next year then and see your prediction for 2024 then. But Ian, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. It's been great having you on. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. No, thanks again for having me on. I love what you're putting out. So keep doing it.
Thanks.